But I want to ask you guys, and Paulie, you're on the show, so we'll let you go first. Is it really a U of M football season if we don't finish with Ohio State?
Oh, I know. That tore my heart up a little bit. I guess I actually don't know why they bumped them up, unfortunately. I haven't really looked into that, but it's nice because we'll get to see them play sooner. But at the same time, if the season lasts that long, I don't know. I think no matter which way you spin it, it's not going to be a normal U of M season regardless.
Yeah.
So I think if we get to see them play each other at all, we will be blessed. So I guess in this specific scenario, I'm okay with it, but only because it's a pandemic going on that we might not have the season end. So I guess I'm okay with it, but you're right. Like, playing them sooner rather than the end kind of sucks, but in this particular scenario, I think it's okay.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I think they bumped them in hopes that we'll get, at least get that far into the season, and then whatever happens after doesn't mean anything, because the odds of getting all the way to November are, you know, very, very slim. But, I mean, Russ, I saw that, and the first thing immediately knowing it, I scrolled right to the end of the schedule and saw, like, no, that's the, did Ohio State change their logo? Like, that's not the Buckeye logo, and what's going on here? So, and I thought, at first I thought I was on the wrong schedule. Like, oh, I must have looked at another team that, you know, has maize and blue M. Nope, they don't exist. We're just us.
I mean, to be fair, you take away Wisconsin, and that Ohio State game is the end of Michigan's schedule anyway. Maryland and Northwestern after. So, I mean, come on. But no, I think Paul hit on it, that the reason it got pulled up is because we might not make it all the way through. So they're going to try and push their headliners up, not right at the top of the schedule because I still want to give them a warm-up, but in a spot that's more likely to actually happen. Like, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State all play each other and have a bye in a one-month stretch. So you're going for your big marquee matchups, just bam, 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 with that mandated break for everybody in between. So after that, it kind of looks like a crapshoot. There's not a lot of marquee matchups after that. Like, Wisconsin, Iowa in the last 2 weeks. Like, I'm looking through it right now. There's not a lot. You're not getting a ton of people for Ohio State, Iowa to end the season. And that might be the biggest game in the last 2 weeks. No, this is set up that we're not getting to the end. So who knows? Maybe it does end with the Ohio State game.
Sergeant Salty?
This is a joke. This is not football. Like, I saw the schedule, and I saw that you guys don't end, and then I'm thinking about how Harbaugh and Day went after each other today, and then Panishuk for Michigan State. He's our biggest defensive guy. He's opting out. Good for him. This is not football. This is not happening. This is all a farce, and there's going to be a common theme today. If you're not in the bubble, you don't exist. And college football, I don't care what anyone says. I promise you, a single second of college football is not happening. There's no way. So I'm actually okay with the fact that Ohio State and Michigan aren't playing at the end of the schedule, because if they were, it would mean they're trying to take football seriously. This is not serious this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I it feels weird. It looks weird. It's just wrong. It really is. But we'll see what happens. Something tells me we're not even going to see these games anyway.
The stats, the salt, the sanity, and every so often they talk about sports too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. As always, until they find someone better, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Listen, we've got a lot of great stuff today, but we've got one thing that we don't usually have, so I'm going to talk about it first. We have, formerly known as D.O. Paulie Rowe, now officially Dr. Robot, Paul Rowe is on the show today. Paulie, how are we doing today?
About yourself.
Why are you so mean, man?
I'm Dr. Robot, you know, the Bond villain.
You are a Bond villain. You're a huge Bond villain. And his little sidekick is here today, but he's here every week. Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus, how are we doing today, buddy?
If you thought I took offense to little, you are damn wrong. I'm a lot in a tiny package, and I'm here.
You're a lot in a tiny package. And when we went away, he was Russ Ivanek. We come back, he's Mr. Russell Heshmati. The guy officially got married.
Upgrades, baby.
Yeah, upgrades. Congratulations, Russ. Like I said, we're like you said before the show, we're now officially a... We're usually a three-ring circus. Today, we're adding an extra ring. We're a four-ring circus. I don't know if that's medically safe to do, but we have a doctor just in case, so we'll be all right. Guys, let's get right into it. We've been waiting long enough for it, and now we have it. Hockey and basketball is back. It is back, and we are loving every minute of it. And I first thing I put in my notes for it is I never realized how much I missed NHL hockey till it came back. I can't turn away. Like I stayed up until 1 something in the morning last night just to catch the end of the Edmonton Chicago game. Flip back and forth from basketball to hockey. That Lakers game was nothing to write home about last night, so it was a lot more hockey than it was basketball. But Jay, I'll let you go first here because all I can see on my screen right now is your big head just nodding up and down. First impressions of this NHL restart.
It's a welcome sight. Edgy out the gate. You had a goal and a fight within the first official game, within the first 3 minutes of that game. So it was a nice way to start it. I will applaud the NHL for how they're doing it. Zero positive tests, two bubble system, everything is working. And then they're also transparent about how they're doing it.
Yep.
I don't know if you guys saw the PR video of how they clean things in between intermissions and benches. And they're like, hey, here's our product. This is our best effort, and it's the best. So, my least favorite part, though, I hate looking at my phone and having to decipher if it is a play-in round-robin game or a qualifier. Like, the qualifier should be its own thing and then do round-robin. I don't want this. If they do this again, don't do it simultaneously. It's confusing as fuck for someone like me.
Yeah. No, I get it. And you let off talking about the fight, so, Russ, I'll ask you. Is it just me, and it could very easily just be me, or is this just a little bit chippier of hockey than we've seen lately? Before they stopped. I mean, we haven't seen hockey lately.
It is, definitely. And I'm trying to weigh how much of that is, hey, it's the playoffs, and things tend to get chippier in the playoffs, and how much it is we've separated these people from their families and their comforts, and we've made them sit alone, and now they're pissed off about it. And either way, yeah, there's a lot more hits. The Columbus-Toronto game had 11 power plays. Game 2 did. That was nuts. There was an 8-minute straight time period where one team was on a power play or another. At one point, Kapanen came out of the box and took a penalty and went back in the box. It was fantastic hockey. I think that's definitely... They're excited to be back, maybe a little overeager, and we're seeing a lot more fighting, chippy stuff. I mean, even when they're not trying to hurt each other, they're hurting each other, like Muzzin. It's nuts out there.
No, I mean, it's absolutely.
I was just about to mention that, you know, because you were commenting on how chippy it is. I was going to say, well, a guy left on a stretcher.
Yeah. I want to ask you guys, because I saw it last night, and for the life of me, I'm not going to remember his name. There was a big hit in the Montreal-Pittsburgh game last night. And, I mean, this guy took a whole face full of boards off of a hit. And to me, that's when it's like, okay, how much further can we go on this before it's like, all right, let's dial it back. I understand you guys have been wanting to play and want to get going, Paul. And you want to you've had this break. It's time to play some hockey. But at what cost? I mean, we're already having a, you know, big crisis in the world of health issue. Let's not add to it by, you know, removing a guy's eye.
Yeah, you know, I think they're back in their element, you know, relatively speaking. So they probably got a little carried away with themselves. And like Russ was saying, there's probably some added social irritation given the current times and, you know, their environment's different. They're not playing on home ice. They're not at their home. They're not with their family.
Yeah.
So it could be fueled by that a little bit, but, you know, they probably, at least, you know, we know the characters that tend to do it. They get a little bit carried away when they go for blood, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean,
I can see them get carried away.
Absolutely. Obviously we could go through these piece by piece. For me, it was fun. I was talking to Paul the other night driving home from work when I was getting him to come on the show. I really had to By the way, Paul, what's with the hard sell to get you on, man? I thought we were all friends. Like, I gotta sit here. I gotta sit here and take you out to dinner, wine and dine you. Like, it's getting harder and harder to get you on this show, man.
Well, see, you had me at hello, and all you had to do was ask.
Great negotiating, my friend. Very good.
I was already there.
But I was mentioning to Paul, there was a moment the other night, and I know I texted you guys about this. There was a moment the other night where I was watching a game, and I'm like, yep, that's COVID hockey. Right in the middle of the Vancouver game, the lights just went out. It just turned off. Because, I honestly think the rink manager just went, oh, wait, someone's still playing? Oh, my bad. Really feel bad about that. But I want to ask you and Russ, I'm going to let you go first here. Is there a series, a matchup we're watching that you just find yourself more drawn to than the rest?
Sorry, did you say I'm going first?
Yes, you are going first.
Well, failure to launch on that one. My bad. Well,
apparently, you were the guy running the lights in the Vancouver game. You just turned off for a minute there.
A minute.
All right.
Just like when McDavid scored that one goal, and the guy who's supposed to pump in the fake crowd noise missed a beat.
Yeah,
it was just silent.
Is there a series that you're just finding yourself more drawn to than the rest?
Yeah, Toronto Columbus.
Okay.
It's a strength versus strength matchup. Toronto knows how to score and can't defend. Columbus knows how to defend and can't score. So it's who can beat whose strength and who sucks more on the other end. And it's been very, very interesting. It drove me insane that Korpisalo now technically has the first playoff shutout in Columbus history because it's going to count as a playoff stat, but it's not the playoffs.
Yeah.
Damn it, Gary. Who could have known this would be a problem? I love that one. Got a lot of star power. Got a very nice competing style of hockey, too.
Okay. I like it. Paulie Rowe, over to you. Is there a series in these that you just, when you know it's on, so you're kind of making sure you block out the time to definitely not miss that one?
Yeah, I like the Boston and Philadelphia series for sure.
Okay.
I was a little disappointed in game one because that would be a little bit more chippy than it was. But just because those two are a little bit more of like the, heavy hitters and the bigger guys from Boston. So I like to see them go at it, but hopefully they can live up to it a little bit more.
Okay. I like it. And Sergeant Salty?
I don't like your question because I watched like every game and I like them all.
Oh, no, then that's fine. That just, like, I was asking, like, all right, well, no, I guess.
Walked to the ice cream shop. I watched that one and that one and that one.
Well, but like, I guess.
I'll answer it, but.
Well, just because, like, for me, I have two, but I have two for very different reasons. Like, I'll watch all of them. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not purposely turning off hockey, when it's on. I'm just saying, like, there were two for me that I told Aaron the other night. I'm like, listen, these games are on. I understand. Like, I'm going to spend time with you, but I also would like to watch this. And the selling point for her was they fight a lot in these games, so she was all right for it. So she was good. So that's what I'm just saying. Like, obviously, they're all great. It's all great hockey, but is there one that, like, when you're scrolling through, on ESPN and you see, oh, these two teams are playing tonight, you're kind of like, yep, can't miss that one.
I will answer your question. It was Carolina, New York, until I saw Lundqvist from die.
Yeah,
so I moved on from that. For me, it's Montreal-Boston. I'm sorry, Montreal and Pittsburgh.
Yep.
I'm afraid of Pittsburgh getting the first overall pick, so I need them to win.
Oh, like, I have a point on that. We'll come back to that.
We'll get to that.
That's the only reason why I'm watching. Number one, Malkin's one of my favorite hockey players. Crosby's okay. I've warmed up to him a little bit. So I do want to see Pittsburgh win at least a couple games more.
Yeah, well,
not too much. Don't get off my sack.
No.
It's a good team.
We texted about this last night because I said that I'm rooting, and that's one of my ones. I'm rooting for Montreal partly because I do a show every week here with Darren McCarty and Sean Bolegian. Sean Bolegian is a huge Habs fan. They both picked Pittsburgh to win this handedly. I said no, I'm going to take Montreal. I think they can do it. Montreal's doing pretty good right now. They're looking pretty good. And also because I told Paul, Tatar's on that team, and I've just never been able to let go of Tatar. I was a big fan of him.
Leave Kuna alone.
I was a big fan of him when he was on our team, and to me, he was one of those guys who he was a product of the wholesale that I really wish they would have held on to. I think he was one of the guys that when they were getting rid of pieces, trying and seeing what they could, you know, get for him. Tatar was the one to keep. So that I'm going to, Jay, as soon as I'm done here, you can go. That's my one. But for me, the number one series I haven't missed, and there's a reason I stayed up past 1 o'clock last night to watch it. It's that Edmonton, Chicago one. You've got Toews and Kane, Draisaitl and McDavid on the ice. And it's like, there's very rare cases where that much talent is on an NHL rink together and watching them. But also because Chicago's been there. They've done it. They know what it takes to hoist a cup. Edmonton is trying to figure out how to do that. So if you're Connor McDavid, if you're Draisaitl, you're watching those two and realizing what it really does take to win a Stanley Cup. And I don't think Edmonton's going to get through. I think Chicago's going to win this. But I think this is a big, big moment for Edmonton to realize what it really takes to play Stanley Cup hockey, Jay.
Not a bad take. I'm not mad at it. Okay. The one question I had going back to the Red Wings is if I need to know if you're a fan of Yuri Hudler then.
No, he did drugs.
he also did that weird tongue thing.
Yeah. No, I just, like, at
the might have hit a point one there.
Drugs, tongue, now I understand why I did it.
These are things, yeah. No, it wasn't that I wasn't not a fan of his, but to me, when they got their time, when it was Nyquist and Tatar and they got their chance, I saw a little bit extra in Tatar that I think if, part of me thinks that, you know, Babcock in the front office wasn't necessarily ever really behind Tatar. They never really thought that he was going to be one of the guys. So I think if they had given him the chance, and I'm not saying you build the team around him, but I think he's a piece they could have held on to, and we would have seen a little bit more success having him than, and I don't remember, whatever we got for him, is what I was trying to say there. So, he said we're going to circle back to it. So before, I want to get to the NBA, because I know Jay has been eating up NBA basketball. But before we get to it, I do want to circle back. Russ, you said you had a comment on the whole Pittsburgh getting the number one pick, so I want to hear it.
Yeah, we are one Pittsburgh loss, one Edmonton loss, away from there being a 25% chance of Lafreniere playing with Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby.
Bullshit.
Question one, what? Question two, which team would you rather he end up on?
Edmonton. Oh, my God.
I can answer that real fast. Edmonton? Because, like I said, I don't think Edmonton is there yet to the point where they're going to have a lot of talent, but I just don't think they're going to have everything pieced together to be able to make a real, real hard push. You add a guy like that to Crosby and Malkin, and you're looking at a immediate three-headed monster that the other two know how to win. It's going to be like that thing where you get the new guy, you bring him in, you say, stand right here and be ready. Right here, don't move. This is your spot. We'll make sure you get the puck. And obviously he's a talented hockey player, but the other two have cups. They know how to do it. So you're adding the final piece to what could give them another chance at a push. Stop nodding your head, Jay. Just take what you're hearing and accept it.
Mm-mm. Nope. You guys are missing the easy answer here. Lafreniere goes to Pittsburgh. I'm not allowing Ken Holland to be gifted another generational talent to be this fucking superhuman, natural, whatever being person he thinks he is. Mm-mm. He's already had enough luck. Lafreniere goes to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but if he goes to Edmonton, it's guaranteed that Ken Holland will screw it up. He'll make sure that nothing good ever comes of it. He'll trade him away for a pack of gum and Dan Cleary's scooter. It's going to be okay. I just got really angry right there.
Yeah, you were very invested in this.
I know, apparently. But the cameras are messed up, so all I can see is Jay's big bald head with the rock right behind him. It's bothering me. But no, sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to yell. Paul's used to a very cool, calm conversation. Paul, where do you want to see that pick go to? Because it's not coming here.
I don't know what to say more at this point, but I do like the point of not feeding Ken Holland anything because I feel like he got lazy on purpose with us, and so I don't want to give him anything for free, especially in this very messed up system where they could potentially get that first pick. So if it comes down to it, and I hate saying it, but I think going to Pittsburgh for that very reason, because I do hate that idea very much of Ken Holland getting him, so I actually do agree with Justin on that. But I also very much hate the idea of Pittsburgh getting that top player.
Okay. Rusty?
I don't like it.
First off, I'm not going to be okay if he goes to Pittsburgh. Spiritually, I'm not going to be okay. So I can't have that. Yes, it does bother me that Ken Holland will have left the Wings to get the number one overall pick, and that'll probably bother me forever. But as a reminder, the last time Edmonton took a winger that high in the draft, well, he's playing in Arizona now, and they traded him for a second-pairing defenseman, and that joke
Adam
has
Larson.
Never gotten old. Yeah, the trade is one for one. We could get that again. Not necessarily Lafreniere, but, hey, you know, do we need Draisaitl? Like, whatever. Something stupid could happen.
Yeah.
That's immensely entertaining. And if it doesn't happen, well, then we get to see Connor McDavid not, you know, continue to do some crazy stuff beyond the first round because he actually has some more help. But how funny is it going to be when they play Lafreniere with Draisaitl and not McDavid? And he's still got to play with Zach Cassian. I can't wait for that. The world will explode again.
You guys are seriously overestimating the fact that even if they get Lafreniere, it's Ken Holland. He won't make it into the NHL till 2025, and then he'll come up for five games and then go down. He'll win more Calder Cups than he will Stanley Cups. Let's put it that way. By the way, Jay, real cheap shot taking away Dwayne Johnson and putting my nieces in the background. You know that's not going to work. You're still in the picture. All right.
I'm trying to make you happy. I'm just trying to make you happy.
Well, you can make me happy. Jay has been talking a lot about following the NBA. He's into it. He's about it. So I'm going to let Jay go right now. And I want to ask you, we'll talk a little more NBA, but this is the question that it's straightforward and it's the most important. Are we really just kind of wasting our time here and just delaying the inevitable that this is going to be LA, Milwaukee in the finals?
Probably, yeah. You know, I was listening to a podcast earlier today, and they were referencing some of these, not like bubble inside the bubble teams, but playoff bubble teams, that like they know how many games they have to win within the eight that are left, and like they're kind of just giving up. Like they're there, it's whatever. So to answer your question, probably yeah. And it's going to look good because their setup, oh, I think they beat the NHL out in terms of how they set up their stadium. It's very intimate. Very, like, I feel like I'm getting sweated on by Antetokounmpo. It's awesome.
By the way, like, Jay, what are your thoughts? And you, Russ and Paul, I don't know if you guys have seen this either. What are your thoughts on the live, like, TV screens of people watching the games? And
I
the
love
fact,
it.
Fact that some girl in, like, North Dakota left Little Wayne hanging for a high five for about 10 minutes there. Like, you don't leave Wheezy hanging like that. That's just wrong.
It's distracting. I do not like it.
You don't like it? I like it. I think it's interesting. I think it's kind of cool. Let's be honest. I think it's better than Joey Votto. Joey Votto asked if the cutouts in the stadiums were real people. And when he found out it was, he asked if he could buy like 10 sections just so it's his face in like 10 sections of games. Like he found out how much he was and he's like, can I get 10? I'll take 10. So it's like, I like it. It's live. You almost feel like there really are fans there even though there aren't. But I agree with you, Jay. I like the setup. I really do, because to me it feels like they just found some gym somewhere, threw up four black curtains, and said, all right, start playing. It really does feel, you know, it. When you're watching the NHL, they have those cool seat covers on, so it works, but you can tell they're in a giant, empty stadium with nobody there. The NBA, it really doesn't feel like it's much bigger than, you know, Farmington High School's gym that they just dressed up a little bit, Russ.
No, that's kind of my main point about the difference here, that NBA is doing so much better, is the NHL did a good job of making the rink not look empty.
Yeah.
The NBA did a really good job of making the venue look like it was made for this,
mm-hmm.
for what they're trying to do. It isn't a watered-down version. It's fantastic. You just look at it, and you're like, this is fun. This is interesting. It honestly, it looks like something out of a video game, which is playing right to the demographic that they're trying to sell to anyways, which is great. No, they have, chef's kiss, they have set this up so well. Now, if they just wouldn't have so many games and waste our time and just get to the playoffs already,
yeah.
That'd be great.
I mean, I said this a couple of weeks ago when they kind of started announcing how they wanted to do this. This, to me, didn't feel like anything other than we need to make sure we give LeBron enough time to shake off the rust. That's all it felt like to me. I get the we need, like, but to be honest, you could have figured out how to do this without play-in stuff. You could have looked and been like, all right, these are the top 16 teams. You go over there, you go over there, let's start. But this to me felt like we can't have LeBron, Kawhi, Anthony Davis, Luka Doncic. We can't have all these guys come in and look terrible. So we need to give them just a little bit of time to get it going. And as much as I love watching basketball, I really do, I'm ready for some playoffs. There's nothing like playoff basketball. It's just you see everybody go to another level. You don't see nights where Oklahoma City beats L.A. by 20 points because L.A. already clinched and they don't care anymore. That doesn't mean no good. Right. They don't care anymore. So it'll be interesting. I'm excited for playoff basketball. I'm more excited about the fact that Jay has held up his end of the bargain. He's after watching that Last Dance documentary, he became into basketball and he's following it. So Jay, I want to ask you though, to test you here, do you have an outside team that isn't LA, that isn't Milwaukee? Do you have a sleeper team that you're kind of looking at as maybe the team that could, you know, run the upset somewhere?
Yes.
Okay. Who is it?
Oh, you wanted to know which one it was.
I'm sorry.
So wait. Let me get this straight. You bring back the Rock. You're all I can see still. You keep messing with your chair, and then you're going to get smart with me. I thought you wanted me to be calm.
You know what? You are our favorite producer, and we're not looking for anyone else. You're not being removed. You're okay.
There you
buddy.
Go. Okay. So who's the sleeper team for you?
I want to say that. That's tough. I don't know. I'm not going to lie.
I've been on one for days. Your guy, he's reaching.
I am. I don't want to play anybody. I don't know yet. You know what? Teaser, next week I'll have one for you.
Yeah. Teaser, does that work? Teaser, you can just copy off me now. It's the Portland Trailblazers. Teaser for you right there. It's Portland Trailblazers.
I'm not going to do it now.
That's fine.
They got to sneak in. They're still in the ninth spot.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think if they can get, it's either them or Denver, to be honest. They're the only two teams I've seen that really, when I look at them, I go, yeah, you guys are kind of built to do this. Like, Houston has set themselves up that if Harden and Westbrook's not even playing tonight, but if they have off nights, those guys, they are literally 80% of their scoring is the two of them. They came back and scored like 90 points combined. So it's that those are they've built a two-headed monster, but that two-headed monster is gonna, I think, run out of gas. I really do. So we'll see what comes of it. All right, moving on. Major League Baseball is back for the minute. This apparently, I don't know about you guys, but this feels like it's changing day to day with the commissioner saying we might end this. These guys need to start taking this seriously. We're probably gonna end. Oh wait, no. We're gonna keep going. I don't know. This guy really does seem like he's, you know, just going back and forth to see how long he can do it before somebody yells at him. But Russ, right now, Tigers 5-5 to start the season. Probably surprised to everyone that actually is taking place. Again, we have to manage expectations here. But when you see these 5-5 Tigers, what are you seeing right now, or where is your expectation at?
I'm seeing small sample sizes because. There is C.J. Cron's hitting the shit out of the ball. Cabrera's not. And everything else is kind of like, meh. Like, this has been, what, 3-4 series that they've played? I mean, they caught the Reds and pantsed them.
Yep.
Like, that's, they played the Royals. We're bad. Yep. Right? All it takes is one or two series against some actually good teams, and they'll be back below, you know, a 400 winning percentage like we expect them to. But the fact that they were 500 at any point in this entire season is all we need to know that the end times are coming and the season won't last. This is ridiculous. They shouldn't have even. We're 10% of the way, or more than that, actually. We're close to like 16% of the way through what they wanted to do with the season. And the Tigers are in the race? Yeah. That ain't right.
30-30 is still doable.
Yeah, well, it's
By the way, by the way, talk about a hero to zero there with Kansas City Royals. Those guys won a World Series a couple years ago, and now they're a horrible baseball team. Like, that was one of those ones where you're just scratching your head going, how did this happen? Like, did everybody else just decide to take the season off at the end? And we just said, okay, you can have it. There you go. So it is interesting. Jay, I know we all said that baseball would probably be the first one to drop off, but when you watch these Tigers, you're still getting to see some of the talent. Obviously, the young guy's not in, but, I mean, is baseball still holding the attention of Justin Marcus?
Not even a second. When series keep getting canceled because one person has COVID and the next day 14 does and some staffers do, it's the equivalent of not having a football season for Michigan end against Ohio State. It got gimmicky for me. I loved watching baseballs hit cardboard cutouts, but like now it's just, I'm waiting for it to burst, man. Like, I'm waiting for baseball to be like, we done. We're out of here. Yeah.
Don't worry, he hasn't gone away. He's still here, and we're going to bring him back in right now. Dr. Robot, Commissioner Manfred last week said, if these guys don't start taking this seriously, following the guidelines we've put in, we're going to shut it down again. You've seen the Marlins test positive, a lot of Marlins test positive. The Tigers series against the Cardinals was canceled because they tested positive. I mean, I'm not asking you to completely explain this I'm not asking you to go outside yourself here, but when you've got multiple teams testing positive, and again, this isn't the whole 50-man team, but a lot of the players testing positive, is it safe to say from a medical standpoint that maybe your freaking bubble isn't working?
Yeah, honestly, if you were to have me pick among the sports that resume play, which one would be most at risk and like start popping up cases more, I probably would have picked baseball last.
Yeah.
To be honest. Only because, one, you're outside. Two, inactive play, you're, like, everyone out out in the outfield or on bases, like, you're kind of already socially distanced, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other than when, a player gets on base from the opposing team or, players are coming together to try to catch a ball. Like, other than that, inactive play, they're pretty well distanced. The dugout, of course, is where it gets iffy because you have the guys that are still spitting. There's still, some of them are not wearing masks. And then in one or at least a couple of games, like, little scrums happen, and they all come together and, act like they're going to fight, but they don't actually fight because it's baseball. And, essentially, I would not have picked baseball to have such an outbreak of cases. Unfortunately, it kind of makes sense for the Marlins, given the state that they're in, I guess. But, as a sport, I would not have predicted that they would have all these outbreaks, and I think that they're definitely trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Well, probably too close.
Yeah, but I'm just like, and when you have this many outbreaks in this small a time, it's not like we're 50 games in and we've only seen two teams break out in this. There's travel on top of that. So you have these teams testing positive, but also traveling. And obviously, it's not like they're all on, Delta Flight 275 commercial. They're flying on their own planes, but they're staying in these hotels. They're going into these stadiums. And again, baseball is not really a contact sport, but you get on first base, there's a first baseman standing about 5 inches away from you the whole time. So it's not like you're necessarily able to social distance the way you need to. I know, Paul, you're not necessarily an infectious disease expert here, but you're the doctor here. Is it just probably smart for them to say, all right, let's cut our losses. We tried this. It's not going to work. We need to just shut down, and we need to wait for this to get a little bit better.
Well, they need to make a clear definition of what their threshold is for how many cases is their final, okay, we're done. I can't necessarily say what number is too much for them, because kind of like if there's one on any team, it's kind of already too many.
Yeah.
Just because, what they say, they're quoting that whole one person can infect 40, those 40 can infect another 40. I mean, it's all you need is the one. So they need to make a clear threshold and just say, okay, if we've reached this, then no more. We got to wrap it up for the season.
Absolutely. And Russ, I was thinking about this, it kind of made sense to me more of, I feel like in the beginning when they were framing out how they were going to do this, they kind of had a theoretical good idea. And then they just seemed to be like, you know what? Everybody else is doing that. Let's just all travel like crazy. They were talking about saying, let's pick 3 or 4 spring training locations and we're going to bubble it. This section of the country will play here. This section of the country will play here. You're not going to be playing. We're not going to see the Boston Red Sox and the San Francisco Giants play each other. You're going to play within your thing. And this year we'll have to work out, a season that's just a little bit wonky. it kind of seemed like they had the right idea and they just decided it made too much sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they didn't fully execute it. They started down that path, and then they're like, no, we'll be fine. Because in a pandemic, the right mindset is, well, we'll be fine. Morons. Paul mentioned it takes one, right? Well, the Marlins had 18 players. Yeah. The Cardinals had 13 players. 9 different teams have had their schedules changed because of outbreaks already. The Marlins were held out of play for a week. They were trying to fit 60 games in 66 days. Error state number 2, by the way. That's 10% of the scheduled season. So they just said, no, you're not playing. We'll make it up. Where are you making it up? There was only 6 days you already weren't playing a game.
Yeah.
They put no cushion in the system. They did no protection. This was doomed to fail.
Well, it's going to be doubleheaders. You're going to see them try to pull off 5 days of doubleheaders.
And how do you even begin to protect anyone without mandatory masks in a doubleheader where you're playing a minimum of 18 innings around these people and you're bringing in everybody because you're going to need the arms for it? It's the one infecting 40, that's one doubleheader. Easy.
Yeah. Well, Jay, you're commissioner. I mean, I asked Paul this, but I'll ask you more from the financial, let's keep everybody safe so that we don't have, you know, 700 angry baseball players giving us crap next year. I mean, even from a financial point, you're not making money at these stadiums. There's no one buying things. This is pretty much just playing baseball for the TV value. Doesn't it make more sense to just say, okay, we really gave it a shot? Unfortunately, we're 2 weeks into this and already we've seen like 27 guys get COVID, and we still want to try to do another 50 games of this. We're probably going to see like the Eastern Hemisphere just fall off if we do this.
I don't think they would. They do everything at the last second. Like, they don't timely get ahead of their stuff. Look at negotiations on money. We talk about how they had COVID plans, but they really didn't. Like, we should have known. Like, I remember the first couple games, broadcasters were like, oh, this guy has his mask only over his mouth, and this guy just spit. And, like, I saw one player wear a mask while he was playing. It's Aldoberto Mondazzi from Kansas City, shortstop.
Okay.
He's, like, the only player I've seen actually wear a mask. Like, if they're doing all this for TV ratings, that's sad. Because that's people's health pitted against, what, 30 people at certain markets watch. Like, no one's watching these things.
All right. And, Paul, I'm going to circle back, and let's be honest. There's a reason we have an edit button, because this is probably going to be a really stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We're still relatively into the NHL season as well. One of Manfred's big things was all the spitting they were seeing from these players. We've all played hockey. It's nothing but the fluids out of your coming out of your face. Like, you're spitting, you're snot rocketing. Like, how are you on earth are you going to tell a hockey player to stop doing that? I just feel like, why are we not seeing like all of the Minnesota Wild having COVID from, you know, and they're even in even tighter quarters on a bench?
Yeah, you know, it is a good question, yeah, because they definitely do that same they definitely do that same action as the baseball players do. So, like, you know, I can't say for sure why. And you know, none of the hockey players are wearing masks.
No.
You know, they just protecting their eyes with the visors. So they got a shield on, at least, but that doesn't do anything. So, yeah, you know, I think it maybe is just something behind the scenes waiting to break out. You know, there's no positive cases yet. But that's yet.
Yeah.
You know, we just got to see if that becomes a thing. Because, you know, you see those guys go into the corners, and, you know, it's kind of like in baseball where they all gather up and get in each other's faces. I mean, it's sports. It happens, right? So it's bound to happen. It probably just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and speaking of...
Number two sport that was probably more risk among the ones that started.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Football being the number one at risk.
Yeah, and speaking of positive tests, we'll get to that here in a minute. Apparently a positive test might not even be a positive test anymore, as we learned here in Detroit. But real quick, this is my idea. Since baseball's probably not going to happen, I'm saying let's just do like a week-long skills contest, like All-Star Week, like a week-long skills contest, and then just call it good. Just pick your three best players from your team. We'll do a home run derby tournament. We'll do all that. Like my play of the week with Mookie Betts. We'll see who really does have the best arm in the outfield, kind of thing. And then let's just call it quits, because we don't need all these people getting desperately ill playing a game that I would be shocked to find out more than 60% of the country is actually watching. So that's just my thoughts. Other day it was announced Dwayne The Rock Johnson, along with his investing partner Danny Garcia and Redbird Capital Partners, have agreed to buy the XFL for $15 million. Yeah, Jay, it finally makes sense now, Jay, for $15 million. Russ, my first question, it's the most important. Yeah, you can't do the eyebrow thing. It just looks like you're having a stroke.
No one can like he does.
Yeah, yeah, it just looks like you're having a stroke. Russ, my first question, and this one, to me, the first thing I thought when I heard about this, is how long until we see The Rock lining up at defensive end for one of these teams?
I honestly hope so. I hope it happens early.
Yeah.
It probably won't, because the guy's smart, and the guy knows that, oh, in 2019, I was the highest paid actor in the entire world. I'm not going to risk that for anything. Mm-hmm. So he probably won't. But if he does, it means that he steered towards making this an entertainment league. Because he can go one of two ways, and I'm interested to see which way you guys would prefer he goes. But one is, tries to be a true NFL feeder league, right? And latches on to the rocket that is the NFL that can't even stop itself. Oh boy, do they try. Or two, he takes his own path where he gives up on the NFL dreams, gets cut from a sub-NFL type league, the CFL, and has a wildly different proposition that makes him wildly successful and rich. Let's do that, right? So yeah. If he's lining up, that means we chose entertainment. We chose different. We chose fun. And, man, that's what the XFL needs. So I hope week one. I doubt it, though.
Yeah, no, I don't think it'll happen. I do actually have a thought on that one, but I don't know if anybody's watched this show. When the report came out here at work, someone came up to me and said, you know what this is? This is Ballers, the show he's on, coming to life.
Yes.
Is what it is. And I'm like, you're kind of right there. Now, I haven't seen all of Ballers. I've seen enough of it to understand the reference, to know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, Russ, as you were saying that, both viably make sense. They really do. But you're talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. If we were talking about, you know, someone like Michael Jordan or someone who played the sport and, you know, was getting involved in that way, I would say it's going to be a feeder league. They're going to actively look to make this what it is. But you're talking about a guy who's been in the WWE. He's an actor. He's a showman. He is looking at it from the let's make it as bright and shiny as we can to get people in. People want that kind of entertainment. So I personally think this is going to be more of that. It's going to be an entertainment league, not to the extent that we're going to see Dwayne Johnson playing defensive end for someone, but I think they're going to try to make it flashier. I hesitate to use this word, but it's the only word that makes sense at the time. They're going to make it a little more gimmicky. It's going to be that thing that it's going to have storylines to it, which is weird to say for football, but it's going to be that thing that will probably be right in between watching live football and watching reality TV kind of thing. And I'm in for it to see what he can do. Now, how long he can sustain it, I don't know. But again, this is one of the most successful actors in the world. He's not going, and very rarely in his career has he stepped into something that he didn't know for sure was going to be a smash hit, Jay.
Do you smell that? Do you smell what he's cooking? I smell what this man is cooking. When The Rock started, first of all, I agree with everything you said. I'm just going to go off for a second here. When The Rock started, he looked like Maui. He was wearing blue and gold and feathers, and people were like, what the hell is this guy doing? He dropped his first people's elbow, and the announcers were like, that was the dumbest finishing move I've ever seen. Ever since then, The Rock has never made a bad decision. His deal with Under Armour and his clothing line, he has a very successful show with Ballers, where he buys the Kansas City Chiefs and owns them. And then everything he's done in the WWE and in acting, I'm even though I'm not blindly following him, I still would.
Yeah.
Like he hits home runs, and the angle that you guys are talking about with gimmicky, the future, the XFL misses out on the drama, and you guys nailed it. They need the storylines. They need the talent, and they need to get through a year to make these teams get pitted against each other. The Rock will sell the hatred and the all the hype-up videos you need to actually care about these teams, because no one cared about them, really. Like, you saw a bunch of dragons, DC Dragons or something? No one gave a shit. The Rock is a salesman and a showsman. He's going to kill it.
Listen, as long as I'm not seeing, like, the middle linebacker for New York and the quarterback for L.A., like, talking in a random hallway about how they're going to kill each other out on the field, and then one of them throws the other one into a gate, like, I'm good with it. No, I don't want that. Like, I want to believe that this is real football. Like, at least to some extent. Like, I want to believe this is real football. I get the showmanship and the dressing it up, but I feel like there are ways to do this, Paul, without turning it into, like, NFL blitz, where you're allowed to, like, pick the guy up and Justin, don't make that face.
We
have a doctor on this show that can explain to you why that's not a good idea. Paul, what for you? Are you more the... Is Rock going to make this a real feeder league, like a minor league system? Or is this going to be a more entertaining, we're going to dress this up for what it needs to be?
Well, what I was going to say was that's the whole point. It's not real football.
Okay.
Because when they tried to play real football, it was just really crappy football. Because I was really excited for it to come back, actually, because I had the expectations of the XFL of old, which had, like, the, you know, the likes of He Hate Me. And just, like, the different style of, you know, instead of a kickoff, they had this run to the ball and kill each other. And then you get the first possession of the game. You know, that's the at least some of the entertainment you expect and what I kind of expected when they were coming back. And then they just came and they just played this, like, amateur, crappy football that you could only watch maybe halfway through until you just couldn't do it anymore, at least for me. So I'm happy he took the reins of this just to try to hopefully get some of that value back in, because it was kind of tough to watch and I lost interest very quickly in it. So hopefully he can put his flair on it and I would love to see it.
Well, Paul, you touched on something that I was thinking about driving up the parking garage today. It was bad football. And you know why it was bad football? Because most of these guys weren't even successful in the Canadian Football League. So, essentially, you're watching a bunch of guys, and I'm not trying to be mean. Listen, I am 5'8 and could not even get on the field in our high school team. So, I'm no one to talk here, but these guys weren't, you know, the level we're accustomed to seeing a professional athlete. So really, I get it's their second chance, but at the same time, if we're ready to run NFL caliber quarterbacks after 1 year, what are we going to do with guys who didn't even get drafted and were playing semi-pro football up until this opportunity? Like, it's not going to translate and hold our attention because you've got too many people in the world who are going to look at it and go, hell, I can do that. Like, really? That's what we're calling football these days? So it's... I'm excited to see what they can do with it. And Jay, go ahead, Pierre.
One final point. Last Chance U is terrible football.
Yes.
But it works.
Yes.
Because it's drama and it's entertainment. And I watched Coach Brown was like one of my favorite people until he got a Twitter account. Now he's a schmuck. But like I watched Last Chance U religiously and it was shitty football. That's kind of like the chemistry that you need the drama to make that shit work.
Well, but see, Last Chance U, I watched because it was like, it's like a car accident. You know it's going to be really bad, but you want, you can't quite turn away till you see what happens. A lot of these guys, it was more for me watching it where you're watching these guys going, look, you're getting the opportunity 99% of athletes would kill for, a chance to play for a school that's successful, that's going to feed you to the right programs. And all you're doing is talking about how you don't really give a crap. You're going to do what you want to do. Well, that's smart. That's going to work out for you. Like Jason Bateman said it best. That's a great strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out for him. You know how it's going to play out for him. It's not going to play out well. So, I haven't watched the new season, Jay. I tried, but it's too much of a car wreck. That it's like it's the same thing. Let's watch 30 guys like act a fool and probably like play bad football. Exactly, play bad football. So hopefully, The Rock can find an in between the NFL and Last Chance U. That'd be great. Before we move on to the PGA Championship, which is this week, and believe me, I'm over the moon about that. I've had ESPN Plus on all day watching it. I do want to talk about actual NFL football. We talked about COVID with the MLB. I want to circle it back to here. Last week, Matt Stafford was put on the COVID list for allegedly receiving a positive test. Come to find out a few days ago that he really got a false negative or a false positive. It was negative. He's tested negative multiple times. He's been set to return. Kenny Golladay, another guy who tested positive, now getting negatives and is back to return. Kelly Stafford has come out and said that it created a lot of problems for them. They were asked to remove their daughters from school. She went into grocery stores and or went to a grocery store and was asked to return to her car and do a pickup. She friends and family who have normal lives and normal jobs were asked to leave work to get tested because they did not feel comfortable. Now, granted, you know, any of us test positive, we're not going to have that because we're not in the public eye as much. I get it's just being safe. But before we get into all of that alone, Paul, I want to ask you, because I kind of asked you to look into a little bit. I mean, has there really been much in the way of cases of this false positive? I do not understand. People testing positive that really weren't positive?
So it involves talking about stats a little bit. So if the president's listening in, he should put down his crayons and pick up his pen, take some notes. But
go on, King. Get it.
Here's a bar chart.
Yeah, you do. Do you.
Oh, sorry, upside down.
You
Here's
do.
Here's a
you.
Bar chart.
So Eric has informed me I don't have any line graphs or bar graphs to go along with this.
But wait, Paul, you're going to do your percentage is going to be better than the world's percentage. Even though you're in the world, you're going to do better than the world percentage.
So anyway, you know, the whole false positive rate hasn't really come up in discussion. At least it's something that, like, in our, you know, in our clinic, in our residency, we're not talking about that. Like, the false positive rate hasn't been an issue. It's more so the false negative rate.
Okay.
That we've been talking about. So what I was looking to in regard to Stafford was, like, you know, what type of test was it? Was it the rapid test? Was it the PCR COVID? Because those have different false negative rates.
Mm-hmm.
So the PCR test has a false negative rate of like 5 to 10%. The rapid has a false negative rate of 20 to 30%.
Now, can I chime in real quick? I didn't know that, and I want to ask you. Am I just being a little like a little overbearing here? Those don't sound like really good percentages to want to base on something like this. Not trying to offend the field, but like 20 to 30% that's the difference between an A and a C. Like, that's just not, that doesn't sound like good numbers to base public health on.
And to my point with that
I jumped the gun.
Like, so I don't know what the false positive rate of that is. I think we need to have a lot more testing over time to get that data, because we don't know what the prevalence is. We don't have enough values for, like, the positive predictive value, the negative predictive value, et cetera. So, like, we need a lot more testing over a period of time to actually get that hardcore data, and then we could probably have a little bit more, of course, like the false positives, false negatives, even more so. Basically, it all gets better. We get more information from all of it. But to that point is, if you have, like, say he did have the PCR test, again, I don't know which one he had.
Yeah.
But with that false negative rate of, again, depends what lab that testing was from, too, because they differ between, like, what provider of those tests, too.
Yeah.
So it's possible he was actually positive, and then false negative, and he could be asymptomatic carrier.
Okay.
If he does have truly no symptoms. Because it would be highly unusual for him to have a false positive and Golladay to have a false positive, and we can't even really comment on what those rates really are. So the false negative seems a lot more likely, if anything, because it depends on who's testing, depends if they do it properly, depends on what type of test it is.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors here. So I think that the false negative could be an issue here, because also it's like, did they want him to be negative those times afterwards?
Yeah, no, I get it. And you, like, Russ and Jay, please, and Paul, even you, I just saw that Golladay is back. I don't remember reading that he was another case of the false positive kind of thing. Okay. I just read that he was back. Now, whether that's he sat out the, you know, the allotted amount of time, passed the tests as they needed him to kind of thing, I don't know. But from how I read it, Paul, I read that because everybody gets tested twice a day. To be in camp. And how I read it was Stafford had a negative test. The false positive was immediately put on the COVID list, but then over the course of the next 2 or 3 days had 4 consecutive negative tests. Is how I read of it. So I guess, like you're saying, it is very possible that he tested negative and then that later test was positive or asymptomatic, but it was just a mix-up? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I wouldn't say mix-up necessarily, but like it really depends on a lot of factors here.
I understand. Mix-up, yeah. I'm not trying to see it.
So like, could it be a false positive? Statistically, sure. I mean, that exists, yeah. Right? But just from what we've been seeing more of, just because we have more information about it, is the false negative rate. So I can't say for sure that's more likely with certainty, but at least from what we know, the false negative rate tends to be pretty high. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know who's swabbing him. Like, because, you know, if it's just like that routine, like coming in for Monday morning, you know, swab up the nose, you know, like if they're going back far enough, if they have like the, you know, proper technique to do it, who's doing it? I don't know. There's a lot of variables because if you have a different swabber, you get a different result even.
Yeah.
You just never know. Because I did read that, like, there were studies where people who swab themselves, after being trained properly, the tests were a lot more sensitive. So if you have someone who's actually trained properly to do it, and again, I don't know who's doing it for them. It could, I don't know if it's just like a trainer or like someone they pulled off the street to be like, here, to shove these up these guys' noses and call it a day.
Let's hope not.
Basically, long story short, a lot of factors involved in this, but mm-hmm. I just give caution to the fact that it could be a false negative. I mean, I hate the fact that they have all those like social consequences that come with it because we see it every day too. But it's very possible that those were false negatives after that and he was actually positive, but I don't know for certain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's why I wanted to have you on. You're kind of the guy that can give us a lot more of an educated input to it than we can. As you've seen, we know who's running the country, so who knows if the stats are even right or not. But I guess for Russ and Jay, I know your name. It's just completely out of my head right now.
Okay.
I don't think you guys understand. Like, I can only see Jay right now, and Jay and I have been making solid eye contact for the last 5 minutes straight.
You don't know what I'm looking at.
You're looking right at me. I don't care. Jay, I'll let you go first. I'll let you go first here, though. With this happening, one, I feel like this opens up a big, you know, door of guys saying, test me right now. You have me on this list, and I might not even be, you know, I don't feel anything. There's nothing wrong with me. So you're going to have guys, you know, wanting to come back because they're not feeling sick. But as we know, you can test positive for this and never experience a single symptom. It just is what it is. So one, do you agree that that's probably something we have a chance of seeing? But two, in cases like this and just in general with these guys, we made fun of it a couple weeks ago about the NHL calling it the injury list, and we're not going to tell you what it is, but shouldn't all teams kind of do this? Because in reality, like, there's just no reason to release these medical things to these people. Cause now you've got everyone in Detroit questioning, are any of our guys really COVID positive, or are we just not doing, you know, or is the test not going right?
So for your last question first, I actually don't mind that they disclose it because it's no different than, like, if the CDC or Oakland County calls you saying, hey, this person tested positive and we know they were by you. Like, it's informing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with it being released. I do sympathize with the Staffords. Like, I didn't really think about the impact that Kelly Stafford shared. And when I read that, I was like, huh, okay, that's really shitty. Like, that sucks that she had to endure that. But then they got millions of dollars, so it kind of washes out. For all the players, though, and getting tested, that's the product of not having a bubble.
Yeah.
And then when you throw in all the variables that Paul and what we've talked about with all these things, and you throw in, like, Colorado State and how they're telling people, don't fucking care about COVID, just go play football or I'm going to cut your time. I don't know if you heard about that. There's so many different opportunities for transmission with all these different variables. So put it all out there. Let everyone know who's got what. But
yeah,
I bet people are freaking out with these. I mean, when you're trying to conduct a $1 billion business and you can have false positives and false negatives, who knows what's happening?
Yeah. Rusty?
So first off, I love Kelly Stafford, Detroit sweetheart and everything. That's fine. However, if your husband tests positive, even if it's a false positive and you think it's a false positive, why are you going to the grocery store?
Yeah.
Why are you sending your kids?
Fair.
Like, I understand that it is way too stigmatized and they got vilified. However, this is still a pandemic. And if you think there's a chance he has it, like a test has said, wrong or not, do the pickup. Get delivery. Mm-hmm. But you have the availability to do these things. So I can't give her very much credit for this and her woe is me story, because you can't say, we have to get out of the idea of going, well, I know better than a medical professional. I know me. Like, you're on the safe side. Right. And to that point, I mean, that's what type 1 errors are, the false positives. That's a statistical term where we'd rather that than, like Paul was saying, the false negatives. Because false positives, we then can be safe, right? We have the testers, we have the testing equipment. They can both be a source of error.
Mm-hmm.
If we're saying more people have it than they actually do, and we're protecting, we're better off than the opposite. But I'm also false positively sure that the NFL would put their finger on the scale to say, oh, no, he doesn't actually have it. Here's something to chew on. 59 players have opted out of this NFL season.
Yep.
Zero of them have been quarterbacks, the number one most important position in football. I'm not saying that they're getting pressure or certain things aren't happening. However, the first big-name quarterback to have a hint of not being able to play because of COVID and disappeared the next day. Not to get a little too conspiracy theory on you, but the NFL has tried to hide worse.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. And listen, I'm not trying to put anybody on blast here. Love Kelly Stafford. Think she's great. Like you said, she's the first lady of Detroit sports right now. I will say, though, Kelly Stafford strikes me as someone who I wonder if maybe someone should be in charge of her social media, because she kind of posts when she has a thought. Just in general,
hey,
a
man,
thought.
She goes at it, man.
She does, and all the credit to her. But and you know what I think of it is it just seems like so much, because it's hard enough to get 5 words out of her husband in a interview he's scheduled for, let alone a soundbite, that you have a wife who she says everything and anything she's thinking. So it is kind of that counterbalance. But listen, I hope he's good. Hope he's ready to go. Lord knows we're going to need him. Obviously, that's something we're going to be getting into down the road once we actually get confirmation that there is going to be a real NFL season. We've all got some one of us has a very, very bold prediction for how this season's going to go. And I'm curious to see down the road if he's going to stick to it or not. We brought Play of the Week back. We're going to get to that. But real quick, we got to do the one thing that's been kind of consistent throughout our show during this pandemic. PGA Championships this week. We have a major. It's been over a year since the last major we had. Crazy to think. This week at TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, opened in 1925. Never hosted a major. It's only hosted a President's Cup in 2009 and 3 Schwab Cups in 10, 11, and 13. Let's just get to the elephant in the room. Tiger's playing. He's playing well. He's playing good. I want to talk to Paul first about this, and the confused looks, there's a reason behind it. It's never supposed to get above like the low 60s the entire week. They're there. For those of you who don't know, Tiger lives in Jupiter, Florida, where it's 100 every day of the year, all year. So Tiger obviously had a lot of back problems throughout the years, had to have fusion surgery on it. Really, everybody thought Tiger's career was over. Obviously, he's made some kind of a comeback. But, Paul, I know when I sent you this question for you to kind of do your research, you said it's kind of going to be a pretty generic answer that you would expect, but I'm going to ask it anyway. 4 days, actually a week, because Tiger's been there since Monday, a week of playing in what for him right now is chillier weather. These guys all have pants and sweaters on. Someone earlier today tweeted out that Jason Day is a baby because he had gloves, like 2 gloves on his hands walking around in 62-degree weather. With that kind of back injury, obviously not just like a stiff back, I slept weird last night. This is a real back problem this guy has. What's going to go into it, and how much can it really affect him going through this week if he somehow finds a way to get into contention?
Yeah, you know, everyone has like their different amounts of coolness in the day or the weather that will affect them. So, you know, if it's cooler out there for him, he's just got to stay loose, got to keep his muscles nice and warmed up. I liken it to, you know, us in track, you know, Russ, Eric, and myself. You just got to warm up appropriately, know what muscles you'll be using, and then just do some kind of like, you know, follow-throughs of, like, warming up those motions. Stay hydrated. Keep the muscles nice and hydrated.
You're talking to the guy who warmed up by going to the bathroom. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, don't do what you did.
Two squats, one down, one up.
Potty squatties.
Yeah, mine was a hold position. I never actually sat down. I just squatted, did what I had to do. That way it was a real good leg workout while I was going to the bathroom.
A fan of the isometric workout.
If you say so.
That's also a word he knows.
I'm sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but you're just saying a lot of stretches, a lot of keeping him, like, keeping it loose.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that he's not in a contact sport. However, that would make golf a lot more interesting to me. But his back should be.
Well, I know, but Paul, like, I guess the reason I asked that question is because if you think, and I've seen you at a driving range, so I know you know at least the motion of a golf swing. Now, maybe not fully, but you at least understand. That lower back is where he had the fusion. That's kind of the key part of a golf swing. You don't hit a golf ball successfully as well as these guys do. I'm watching right now. I have it on the other screen, and these guys are flipping their backs super fast. So for someone who's already got a bad back on top of the cooler weather, body may not be as acclimated, it has to be a lot more of a concern, because if that thing tightens up, we've all had our backs tighten up at some point in our life, and you honestly think you're a 90-year-old man.
So you mean you don't hold it like a hockey stick and hit it as hard as you can?
No, well, you hit it as hard as you can, you just don't hold it like a hockey stick.
Yeah, that's what I do, that's okay.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like he's been doing okay in his other performances, relatively, from my understanding, right? So, like, he's just got to kind of know his limits, just kind of stick to his usual performance, know his follow-through, and not try to, you know, put too much into it than beyond what he's used to.
All right.
Just stay loose out there.
Yeah, makes sense to me. I'll buy it. You're selling it, I'll buy it. Let's get it in. Let's do our predictions real quick. Gonna go first here. I went a little out of the way. There's a couple really, really good pairings for this week. I decided to step out of that and go with maybe the lesser one. I'm taking. By the way, I cannot. I looked through this. I cannot feasibly come up with the way that Russ has any play on words here, but I'm excited to see it anyway. I'm going with Gary Woodland, Brooks Koepka, and Shane Lowry. They are all the three current reigning major champions. They are the last three guys to win majors. Woodland won the U.S. Open, Lowry won the Open, and Koepka is the reigning PGA champion. So that helps. But two of the three, Woodland and Lowry, are very, very accurate golfers. And in looking at this course, accuracy is going to be the premium. They have this thing set up for U.S. Open rough. Today, Tiger was standing in the rough, and you couldn't see his shoes. So this rough is big. It's good to go. I'm taking the groupings of Woodland, Koepka, and Lowry, Jay.
You took mine.
Oh, my
bad.
Which
is very upsetting. But I have a backup plan.
Okay, good.
Because I came prepared today. 62% of the last 34 winners at the PGA Championships had never won a major before.
Okay.
I don't think... 2 seconds ago I did, but this is for good radio. I don't think Koepka's going to win it again. For his third, actually, would be a three-peat for him.
Yep.
Rory, DJ, Ricky, and Phil have not played good, especially Rory, and especially DJ. So I don't even like half of my pairing options that I had. I'm going with Tiger. I don't need my other two guys. Tiger birdied. Spoiler alert for Russ and Paul. I know you're going to stop after the show and go watch all the coverage from today, right?
Nope.
Nope. Tiger birdied one, all right? Tiger's on. He don't give a shit about his back. He birdied the first hole. He's going to be birdieing on Sunday. I'm going with Tiger Woods. That's all I need. I don't care about his grouping. I don't know who's in his grouping. It's probably Lowry and someone else. Doesn't matter.
Oh, with Tiger, it's Rory. It's Rory and Justin Thomas.
Even worse.
Both of which, all three of them have PGA championships already.
Rory needs the win. It just won't be this weekend. I'm going with Tiger. That's
okay.
My final answer.
All right, Russ, now before you give us yours, I would like to let you know, in case you weren't privy to this information, on the seventh hole today, because the event's already going on, so we're making our predictions midway. On the seventh hole today, which means he still had another 12 holes to go, Bryson DeChambeau broke his driver. So he didn't have a driver for the next 12 holes. Just giving that to you, letting you hold on to it, because you are not allowed to make adjustments to your clubs or allowed to replace clubs if you ruin, if you break them. Nope. Guys have broken their putters before out of anger. They've had to putt with irons before. You are not allowed to replace a club mid-round.
What?
Rory threw his 3-wood into a in the water one time. He had to play the rest of the round without a fairway wood.
When you were trying to sell me on golf, this is what you should have started with.
Oh, I'll send you the video. They've got like a 10-minute video that's the best of meltdowns. It's guys breaking putters, throwing stuff. Yeah, there's... But yes, you're not allowed to replace a club, and Bryson's game is predicated on hit the ball really, really far. So,
yes.
Just so you know.
Hypothetically. Because now you got me interested.
Yep.
Because the driver's so important to him,
yep.
You can only have a set number of clubs in your bag when you start, right?
Yeah.
Could he have two drivers?
He actually can. Phil Mickelson won the Masters in 06 with two drivers. He put...
Look at this guy.
Well, no, Phil's my favorite golfer, but I also remember this because it was crazy. Phil had two drivers in his bag. I believe he took out like a long iron, and he had two drivers because he had one built that, like, I use air quotes here. He said, I had one built that went straight, meaning he could swing however he wanted, and it pretty much went straight for him. He had another one because he felt like the course called for it. He had one built that he said no matter what he did, it would fade, or it would, you know, it would go for him, that'd be left. It would go left for him.
Huh.
So he had two drivers. He said they were the exact same degrees, drivers, everything. He just had them built and tinkered with to the way that on certain holes he could pull that driver out, make that swing, and feel like there's no possible way this ball's going to do anything but fade for me. So yeah, you could technically have a bag that's got six, you can have 14 clubs. You could have a bag that's got, you know, seven drivers and seven not drivers if you really wanted. A lot of the long drive guys do that because they have different drivers built different ways. But yes, you could technically carry two drivers. And I have a feeling that tomorrow he probably will have something, because he didn't break this like hitting a ball or overreacting. The head just fell off. So,
right.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Also, that's some professional shit from you. You just pull out. And, in 2006, that was deeply impressive.
You're welcome.
However, okay. I'll go to my prediction now without further ado. You keep referring to whatever I do as a poem, so I'm going to give you your damn poem.
Yes!
We're finally here. There once was a man from North Texas. He's rich and probably drives a Lexus. His last name rhymes with teeth, and his goal is to unsheathe his Johnson and to flower a rose. Give me Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson. Fourth are back, dick jokes are back, boys.
I love it, I love it, I love it. Oh, it's great. Oh.
Wow. I almost laughed when you're like, there once was a guy from Nantucket. And I was like, what
yeah,
the
fuck
are we doing?
I had to be just as absurd as I could with it.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What are we deflowering now? Justin Rose? We're deflowering Justin Rose?
Deflowering Justin Rose,
whatever
I guess.
Gets you through. Sometimes you get stuck in the rough and you just got to bang it out.
All right. I'm going to have to go to the bathroom and warm up.
All right, I love it. All right, here we go. It's been long enough since we had it. We finally have Play of the Week. We finally have it back. But, of course, being us, we're a Justin-led show. We couldn't do it without making a little tweak. So we have our Plays of the Week, and then we just have our Fun Play of the Week. Something that it's making SportsCenter, but it's not making SportsCenter because someone did a miraculous feat of athleticism. So without further ado... Here are our Plays of the Week and Fun Plays of the Week. I'm going to lead it off because my Fun Play of the Week does not have audio, but it's just amazing. First game back of the season, it's the Chicago Cubs against the Milwaukee Brewers, and routine single, guy gets on first, nothing to it. Except first baseman Anthony Rizzo decides, you know what, I'm taking this pandemic seriously, and offers the man a little bit of hand sanitizer. I thought it was great. Thought it was hilarious, lots of fun with it, and it's a guy who, you know, he knows with everything going on, a little bit of lightening of the mood is never a bad thing. So that's my fun play of the week. My play of the week was one that the second I saw it, I knew I have a real good chance at winning this week because this is just hard to beat. I'm going to let the play speak for itself here, but here's my play of the week.
That's a broken bat flare down the line to right and sinks in there for Marte. Betts over to dig it out. Marte headed to second. He's going to try for three. Mookie's throw right on the money. Ho-ho, Mookie.
Ho-ho, Mookie indeed. Mookie Betts with the strike from the outfield to third base for the out. First thing I thought about, because Mookie's on the Dodgers now, was shades of Yasiel Puig back when he did it a couple times. So that's my play of the week. Mookie with the strike to get the out. Jay, over to you for your play of the week. You can go whichever way you want. I got them both ready to go.
I have four.
Oh, go to hell.
Did you just say four?
My fun play of the week, number one, any cardboard cutout getting assaulted. It happened famously in the beginning between the Mets and the Braves. A dog got pelted by a home run. Do we have audio of that, Eric?
1-2 for Duvall, 3-for-7 against Mets. Head-to-head. And this breaking ball ripped toward right. Conforto on the run, and that ball is gone! Adam Duvall with a solo home run, and the Braves have their first run of the season. It's 1-0 here in the second.
The pure audio of a piece of cardboard getting smoked, I could watch it all day. I came across that Twitter, it was beautiful. So there's my not, or my fun one. My other two, I have three more, I promise I had four. One of them is Pittsburgh having 10 guys on the ice. That was hilarious. And my other play of the week that's also fun is anyone who voted in the primaries for their area. So if you voted this week, I'm proud of you. My actual play of the week, should we just run the audio?
Here you go. Here's your audio.
National save from Peter. He's made a commitment knowing he's not going to get a piece of that centering attempt. And talk about making his glove big. Layer beautifully, mechanically. Look at him track it with his eyes. And he moves into the shooting angle with this glove.
If you go watch that clip, you will get tingles. You will get all kinds of sensations. Peter Mrazek is playing out of his damn mind. And Carolina might fuck around and win this whole damn thing, all right? He was left out to dry and makes a miraculous glove save. And I was at work watching it, not doing my job. And I was just losing my mind. Because it was beautiful goaltending. So Peter Mrazek's my real. Everything else is just for fun.
Absolutely. All right. Over to... You know what? He's here. Let's let him get a word in edgewise. Dio Pauly Rowe, you said you had a play of the week and a fun play of the week for us.
Yeah, so I guess I'll do my one top play and then three funnier, interesting plays.
Yes, you got four as well. Yeah.
So my top play, I got to go with hockey on this one, was Chris Kreider's individual effort, splitting the defense and going short side with 12 seconds into the second period on the Hurricanes. It was absolutely beautiful. Put the team on your back and then just go through the D and score it. Because it was just it was one of those moments where you just know he's going to score. And he knew he was going to score. So I absolutely loved it. So my funnier, interesting plays.
Yep.
This one's not so much funny, but I thought it was kind of cool, was that I saw a side-by-side warm-up of Henrik Lundqvist in the first game and the second game. From the moment he walks out from the locker room to the ice, and they did the side-by-side, and it's eerily identical. He's in step with himself on separate occasions. From the second he steps off that bench to what he does, it was timed essentially perfectly, and it was crazy. It was pretty cool.
Okay.
Next is when Josh Harrison of the Washington Nationals got his first home run with the Nationals, and who's celebrating harder than his fellow teammate Juan Soto, who is by himself on top of the dugout, just dancing like he's doing this, like, surfing some sort of dance. There's no fans, right? No fans anywhere. His teammates aren't even looking at him, so he's literally dancing like nobody is watching him. He's just up there having a ball, just dancing for himself because no one's up there. And then lastly was in the Twins versus Pirates game, the game was delayed 9 minutes for a drone that just kind of hopped in and was just hovering over the field for whatever reason. And if it's any fan who figured, you know, this is my free ticket, I'm just going to fly my drone over there. That's probably what it was. I don't know. But I thought it was pretty funny that, what? You know, a little toy plane is going to essentially delay a baseball game. But those are my three. I thought those were pretty cool.
Those are all very, very good. I like it. Rusty, you got your work cut out for you, man.
So I had two, like a schmuck, apparently.
Yeah.
So I'll add another one at least to get to three, just as a quick, because it's fun, but it doesn't quite make my play of the week. The McDavid goal against Chicago, where he knocks the puck out of midair,
yep,
flips it back up over the defender's stick, and then over the goalie's shoulder. That's fun, and there's like three humans that can make that play.
Yep.
That exist, period.
Absolutely.
It was ridiculous. Hockey's a theme, so I'm not sorry. It's back from noon on. That's all I'm watching, so we're going to keep going there. My fun play of the week was Matthews pantsing Steve Simmons in the media scrum after the game, calling him out for his bullshit COVID report. There's a reason the NHL is not disclosing them, but Steve Simmons, without any sources, without confirming with Matthews, wrote up this whole report that he had COVID. So Matthews took issue with him. Still answered his question, though. And that's
we'll
more
go back to the media center for another question. Steve Simmons, Toronto Sun for Austin. It's one thing to hear about how tight they play and to even watch the films of how tight they play. What was it like to experience it?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's unfortunate that I'm getting a question from you at this point, Steve, but I just wanted to say I didn't really appreciate the article you wrote about me a couple months ago. I thought, you know, it was a bit unethical, to be honest, but moving along.
Yeah, so from the same guy that gave us Phil Kessel's hot dogs and literally has a section on his Wikipedia page that says controversies, Steve Simmons, he deserves every barb he gets. So I love Austin Matthews for it.
Absolutely.
And then my real play of the week is Nazem Kadri. Less than 0.1 seconds left. Hammers home a rebound. In the most dramatic sense, it can be Landeskog one-timer off the crossbar, catches it right on the doorstep, puts it past racist-ass Jordan Binnington. That is what playoff hockey looks like, and it will forever be my favorite.
Landeskog is here. Up top, it's Makar. Two to go, one to go. Landeskog shoots. He hit the post. Score! Score! Wasn't in time. Nazem Kadri cleans up. Wasn't in time.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You could say Binnington had the blues.
Shut up.
Oh, that's bad. Bet that was the wrong pot. All right, well, those are our plays of the week. Obviously, we'll try to get them up here in the next day or so. Everybody can vote. I got a lot of tough choices to pick from on our actual plays of the week. Fun plays of the week. I'm enjoying seeing these because, you know what, in the world we're living in right now, being able to laugh is just it's amazing. It's great. First and foremost, I got to thank him for taking time out of his busy day. That is Dr. Robot, Dio Pauly Rowe. We appreciate you being on, man.
Oh, I love being on here. And you don't have to coax me to be on here. You just have to ask me.
Okay, same time next week. Same time next week. Russ, so happy for you, man. I know we started off the show joking with you, but definitely happy for you. Another great one from the Statman, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Oh, it's always a blast, and it gives me structure to these crazy times. And if I can leave you with this thought, now that I'm married, I've realized there truly are no rules. The adults don't know what they're doing. I had a coffee float for breakfast, melted some chocolate on it. There's no rules.
There are no rules.
Thank you for bringing me structure.
Absolutely. Sergeant Salty, we got off to a rocky start. You made me mad. But you know what? No matter what happens, I know same time next week, you're going to be in that exact same spot, ready to go. Always like having you on, man.
I hope your camera only works so you can just stare at me the whole time again. I kind of like the attention, so keep looking at me, baby.
Absolutely. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.